It's time for another episode of the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast with your hosts, Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, Brad Tarver, and Jason Young.
So it's been a couple of weeks, and it's good to be back. Jim, you got a new switch or router while we were away?
A new switch. I purchased it last week, and I installed it yesterday. It's the 8-port UniFi, a Ubiquiti UniFi switch. I got the 60-watt version because Jason here said that was all I needed. Super easy to set up yesterday. I took the cheap little $10-$20 plastic switch I had going out and plugged everything in, plugged in my laptop directly to the switch, went to the management console once everything booted back up, and just said, adopt the switch, and it's working great, and my internet's working better than it ever has since I moved in here. I've tweaked around with the settings on the access point, and I set it to the strongest signal that it would do with the super wide channel. I think there was a tendency for routers or Wi-Fi routers to not want to use that wide channel here because of interference, because I've heard that, you know, the more interference it is, the better it is to go with the narrow channels because you get a better signal. But what I did is set the UniFi access point to super strength, all the way up highest strength signal, and then set it to that 80 megahertz channel width by default. And my Wi-Fi here is doing real well now. I'm getting 200, 300 down. I have a 400 down plan, so over my Wi-Fi, that's much better than I've ever got since I moved in here. So I'm super happy with what we got going on right now.
The Ubiquiti gear is huge performance bang for the buck, man. I mean, I don't know if there's any other brand out there right now that gives that much performance and enterprise quality service with really a consumer grade price tag associated with it.
I even took the access point and mounted it, kind of mounted it on the wall. So it's like hanging above my TV vertically up against the wall. It's just like this little disc that's hanging up there. And, you know, so when people come in, they see it, and then I get to talk about it and act like a real nerd.
And so also, speaking of being a real nerd, you going with the 60-watt version allowed you to dump the PoE adapter for both your cloud key and your access point, right?
Yeah, so that was another, that was probably the bigger reason that I got this switch, not necessarily that the other switch wasn't working great, although I have seen better performance with this new one. I had so much junk plugged. Everything, I have a small apartment, and everything is in the same spot. I mean, I have the TV, the soundbar, the Apple TV, the Xbox, the modem, the, you know, the router, the access point, the HD home run. Every single thing is in the same exact spot. And so I actually didn't have a place to plug in the HD home run before because I had used up all the wider plug-in spots in the power strip I have. So I actually ordered a new power strip 2 weeks ago and put it in down there. And I had fixed that problem. And then I was like, nah, I'm just going to get this switch. And so now I've got a bunch of big block space left in this new power adapter that I have because I was able to take out the two little USB plugs that were going from the AP and the key, is that what it's called? The
cloud key, yeah.
Cloud key, yeah. So both of those are just plugged into PoE ports. And while I'm here, I'm just going to ask, and I think I know the answer to this, but I can plug something into a PoE port that doesn't need PoE, right? It doesn't matter. It's going
to
work fine. Okay, I thought that. And I haven't yet, but that's all I have left now is two PoE ports left that aren't being taken out of the 8. I'm using 6 of them. So,
but make sure that those ports are set to PoE plus or auto negotiate or whatever, because you can fry something by actually forcing the port to 24 or 48 volts or watts, I should say.
Yeah, and I guess I can configure that. I noticed that in the setting panel. It actually tells you which ports are supplying power and which ones are just plain old ports. And it tells you what each port is negotiated at and everything. It's all, I mean, there's tons of stats there for anything you want to know about your network. It's kind
of
neat.
Well, speaking of stats, one of the nice things about you having UniFi and Ubiquiti stuff front to back as far as your access point, your switch, and your security gateway is you can turn on deep packet inspection and get great statistics of exactly where your data is going, how much data you're using. It's kind of a real eye-opener to me to see. I didn't realize how much checking in with home, my Lutron lights and the Hue switch actually talk out to the internet. So it was kind of cool to see that in the deep packet inspection stuff.
I was doing that before with the other switch because the cloud key was plugged in there, but you know, maybe now
the Unify Security Gateway gives you that functionality. I don't have the Unify switch and I'm able to do that. So it's the USG that actually collects that information.
Yeah, it's amazing to see how much stuff goes over like Backblaze, you know, how much stuff is actually going to Backblaze. I actually changed the setting there to where now I've just got things updating to Backblaze from midnight to 8 a.m. and it catches up fine. So I'm just not doing it all day long. So that works for me.
Was it really choking out your bandwidth or something? What was the deal?
No, it just, you know, it was just running all day long. And if I'm here, it's something, you know, that I don't want it running. And also, because I do travel with my laptop, I would just as soon not be at work and have stuff backing up to Backblaze while I'm at work. So, you know, technically all my computers are portable. The MacBook Pro that's here, I mean, I have two computers, both of them MacBook Pros. So I just set them both to just, you know, hey, do this from midnight to 8 a.m. And it just kind of, I just know they both do it because I don't need all that stuff backing up when I'm on site at a client's internet. Although at the client I'm at in St. Louis now, the Ethernet recently started working. Before, it would work, but it didn't work good with HTTPS. There were problems with how we were configured because we're on a different access point than the enterprise access point because we're contractors. It's the fastest internet I've ever seen on their Ethernet now when I'm there. I can get just crazy download speeds. So it's fun to play around with.
That's why I use trip mode on my laptop so that if I go to a client site and need to jump on their wireless, I'll flip trip mode on. So it's only allowing me to, say, use Safari, Chrome, and maybe my email and a couple other handful of utilities, but not letting all the other things that would run in the background to update, like, for example, Backblaze.
I should do that. I have that app. I should do that when I'm on site just to keep, you know, weird stuff from running. And
I actually paid for trip mode, I don't know, a long time ago, maybe a year or two ago. But now SetApp, if you use that, they include trip mode in their suite of apps now.
The other benefit for trip mode is if you're traveling and you're not, let's say you're tethered via, you know, your iPhone or something to the internet. It's been my experience that oftentimes, no matter how fast these connections are, if you're going over the Wi-Fi access point that it creates or Bluetooth or whatever, it still can be kind of sluggish at times.
It feels so, single-threaded, if you will.
Yes, yes. There you go. That's a good way to put it. So turning off things like Dropbox or, you know, in my case, ShareFile or some of these other services that I use for file synchronization, it's a must. Like, you can't not do it. And you never know when you're going to be at a client where they're going to be finicky about things. I can remember, now granted, this was a long time ago. This was like 2001. I was at a large gas company in Houston, fill in the blank. I'm not going to say their name. But at the time I was running Linux, and I think I had like an X server on my desktop. And I remember one of the obnoxious Unix guys coming in and like, oh, that's a nice thing you got there, blah, blah, blah. And then like, turn that off our network right now. Like, just laid into me. Like, came in with a smile and then immediately just... He kind of reminded me of the science fiction author Harlan Ellison, sort of like that Napoleonic short guy complex. So I'm like, okay, yes, sir. And then he walks away and I just firewalled my laptop immediately and kept doing what I was doing. But yeah, you need something like trip mode, especially if you're a contractor. It's a good thing to have to be able just to not run anything unnecessarily. Because that bandwidth over the phone, man, single thread is a great way to put it because it does seem to suck so bad.
Yeah, we'll put a link to the show notes in there. I know we've talked way back in the past, in the early days of the podcast, about trip mode. But it keeps coming up, so it's definitely something that if you're a traveling salesman like I am, you know, not so much, but you know what I mean. Trip mode is good
or
stuff.
Or a traveling engineer.
Yeah, any of those things.
So let's start with some follow-up. We talked about Waze a few weeks ago, a town in New Jersey that was trying to find drivers who drive through without a special pass. Now it looks like Los Angeles is getting in on that action, so they're slamming Waze. An LA city councilman actually is accusing Waze of creating dangerous condition and wants the city to review possible legal action. Now, it seems really weird to me that there's any kind of legal ramifications for a company making a suggestion that you drive on public roads. This seems insane to me. Like, is this what it's come to? They present a road. You're free not to take it. It doesn't force your car over that direction. You can ignore it. You can use an alternative, whatever you want. It doesn't seem... How is this even something that could happen? I don't understand it.
Well, it just seems backwards simply because it's trying to help you avoid a congested area. And if you drive to the congested area, you're just going to make it what? More congested. So send the cars over the less congested area so that maybe whatever has heavier traffic might be able to clear up a little sooner for everyone else that is stuck in that other scenario.
And also, how is this a quantifiable complaint, right? Do they have the server logs of Waze that's showing how many active users at that particular time got directed through this one dangerous condition place that they're making up? I mean, like, how do they know, other than if they're plugging in the route the day of, well, they might get that, but how do they know how many people actually chose that based on Waze and whether or not Waze caused that condition? Just a, you know, how do you punish somebody without a quantifiable amount to put on them?
I mean, they should like it simply because if you're going to drive through another area and say you need to pee or get a Red Bull or a coffee or something, you're going to stop, you know, in that alternate route at a gas station or Starbucks or whatever and give them your money, which is going to go back into the local economy. So why are you complaining?
Well, legally, there's no law that says you can't drive on a public road or advocate that someone drive on a public road. You're not doing anything wrong by saying, hey, the shortest distance from here to there and the traffic is this. It's not against the law. I mean, I don't even understand how it gets this far.
Exactly. I mean, the issue here is that, number one, like Jason said, they can't prove at all that it's Waze that's bringing people through this area, that's, you know, where the majority of these people are coming from. And then also, even if Waze does it once or twice to someone and sends them through there, well, then they've learned that route. And if they hit congestion, they're like, oh, I'm going to take this side road, even if they're not on Waze. So it's just a human nature of when you learn a better way to go, you know, I mean, that's one of the weird things about moving to a new city is, you know, I grew up in South Mississippi and I know how to get places. And if this road is closed or this road's backed up, I go this way or I cut down this little road because you grew up, you learned to drive there, you know all the back roads, you know everything. You get to someplace new, you don't know all this stuff and you eventually learn it. I mean, when I moved to downtown Dallas, I used Waze for 3 to 6 months just to get anywhere and to get home because it was basically, I moved here and I'd been to downtown 3 or 4 times the whole time I lived in Dallas. So I just did not know my way around. Now, you know, I get in my car and I'm going all these, you know, weird little routes downtown that I know that'll get me to the right spot because Waze has kind of taught me over time what it is, you know, what the direction I need to go in, you know, so I know if I'm going someplace north, then I should probably do this, or if I'm going someplace east or west, you know, all those things, it teaches you these things. The fact that this has now happened twice, you know, once in New York and once in L.A., I mean, we'll caveat it with, you know, it's been in roughly New York and L.A. that this has happened. But still, it's kind of crazy that they could try to blame Waze because my guess is Apple Maps and Google Maps and anybody else is probably doing the same thing.
And it's a reminder that Los Angeles has not only the worst traffic in the country, but it's also the worst traffic in the world. So I think they see an opportunity. Hey, Google has deep pockets. Let's go after them. And that's really what this is. Has to be.
But yeah, we can't write enough tickets anymore. So now we have to go after the people with the money.
You think that increased traffic through areas that weren't expecting it, that they could have a revenue increase in some areas from citations. I mean, that would be, I don't know, it just seems like if the cities aren't willing to solve traffic problems and engineering by technology companies is, then take any help that you can get.
Or just put up some toll booths. Start collecting tolls.
We'll put the link in the show notes, but what this guy was complaining about is the grade on this street that people are driving up and that it's dangerous. Well, if you know the grade on the street is dangerous, then fix the street. Don't complain to Google because they're sending people up it. I mean, if it's a problem, then close the street and make people go around another way. You know, if it's a dangerous street to begin with, then fix the problem.
A road is either safe to drive on or it isn't. There isn't like an acceptable number of fatalities or casualties you want on that road. So
exactly. The tipping point is it's safe or it's not. It's not, you know, sort of safe. You might want to be, you know, there's no gray area there.
So it looks like there's a couple of low-cost streaming services that are going to be doing TV on the cheap over the internet this summer. One is called Philo that we just heard about. And what's the other one is from AT&T. And this was revealed while the CEO was on the stand in front of the Department of Justice about the merger with Time Warner. And they revealed, and both of these services are going to be like $15 or $16 a month, but there's going to be no sports content. So as we all know, that one of the reasons your cable bill is so high is because of the sports that they carry, right? The contracts to show these things have an incredible amount of cost. They get passed directly to the consumers. Remove sports from the equation, and it becomes suddenly a much more affordable package for people to have. I mean, if they can charge $15 a month without sports and make a profit, that should tell you, you know, how thin the margins were in some cases for some of the other content. So what do you guys think about this? Is this something you would possibly ever in any lifetime? I know what the answer is, but I want to hear you say it.
Well, so my first question is about the sports, and that is, are they truly cutting all sports, or are they just not offering additional sports packages like ESPN or SEC Network or Big Ten Network? Because, I mean, there's a certain amount of sports that are available on ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox. Are they actually cutting those off of those channels, or?
I think it's just pay cable channels. So it wouldn't be like your local ABCs and CBSs and Fox. What they're carrying is all of the other pay channel type channels like CNN and Sci-Fi and, you know, maybe TBS or TNT who do carry sports. I don't think they're not cutting stations that might air sports every now and then like a TNT, but they're cutting dedicated sports channels. Like ESPN
and your local
Fox Sports
and those broadcast things. Channels too.
Yeah.
There's none of those.
So I mean, I think that shows that, you know, when you have a channel like a Sci-Fi or movie channel or, you know, any of those kind of things, the money they earn is not from subscription fees. Those channels have such small, I would say, per subscriber fees that probably are passed on to the cable companies. Where they make their money is strictly through the advertising on their channel. The reason ESPN is in trouble and is going to be further in trouble is because they've been double dipping for years to pay for, you know, their content. So they pay tons of money for the rights to all these big sports leagues. They sell advertising and they make money from that. And they're also the most expensive channel on pay cable at whatever it is right now, $6-$7 per subscriber for ESPN. So they've been double dipping for, you know, a long time, and it's been a great business model for them until now that it's not, that so many people are cutting sports or actually realizing that, you know, grandma pays $50 a month for cable and she never touches ESPN and all she watches is the Lifetime Network. Well, now she can, you know, pay, what'd you say it was, Brian, 15 for something like this. And, you know, she gets every station that's got all the movies and game shows on it that she wants to see. And she don't have to worry about paying for, you know, the NFL or baseball or basketball or anything. I mean, it's actually, it kind of surprises me that it's taken this long for this to happen, quite frankly. I think it seems like to me that this should have, you know, been around a lot earlier. But I, you know, I think if somebody can get a foothold in the door, I mean, obviously you've got to get a big enough subscriber base to make it, you know, make it worth the money. But, you know, I think it could definitely work.
So one other interesting note that I see here in the show notes is that AT&T is actually including their $15 a month streaming service for free for their wireless subscribers. So I wonder if we're going to see someone like Verizon follow suit since they have such a big media presence as well.
They own Yahoo, but they don't have, well, I mean, they have their broadband and their, in certain markets where they do TV service, but not nationwide. But yeah, I mean, as a Verizon subscriber, I always like more options other than, you know, rather than less. But I mean, I could see myself going for something like this. Not a huge sports fan, not that I couldn't live without it, not, you know, the price differential being what it is, but I do like the local channel type stuff every so often. So I think it's a good thing, though. I'm glad. And it also apparently, the at least with Philo, I assume with AT&T, but you never can tell, they're going to be using the TV Anywhere, so you can use all of the TV apps to be able to view things like the AMC app or the you know, whatever, to on the Apple TV, to be able to watch the content behind the paywall, which is not enough of these providers do that. I'm really surprised and disappointed by that. You guys ever try to use those apps?
Not really. I was going to say earlier when Jason was talking about AT&T, we hear rumors every couple of months that SoftBank is looking to buy Charter, which actually owns what used to be Time Warner. So it's Charter, Time Warner, Bright House, all those networks that are now a big cable company. And so SoftBank also owns Sprint. So that would be a similar combination there, where you've got a big mobile company joining up with a cable company, and to be able to offer packages that could do some, you know, some streaming along with your mobile in that case. And I think that's one of the areas that, you know, why the rumors exist.
Brad, what about you? Would that be an option you would put money towards?
I already subscribe to DirecTV Now, and I get it pretty deeply discounted just because I'm an AT&T subscriber for our wireless. So I'm not looking to switch anytime soon, because I had tried out Sling TV and the PlayStation View for a little while, and I wasn't watching enough of the different content that's offered to continue to pay for the $35 to $40 a month that it costs. But it seemed like a no-brainer with the discount that I get via AT&T and DirecTV Now, because I pay about $10 a month for it, and that's for their $35 package.
Brad, do you get charged bandwidth for if you watch DirecTV Now on your AT&T phone?
No.
Can you stream that TV anywhere? See, that's an awesome built-in right
which
there.
Which we have unlimited really data cool. on our cell phones anyway.
I was about to say, but, is it anymore since every provider offers unlimited data? Who cares?
But supposedly AT&T, if you have it, they don't count it against your, you know, your data quota. But it
right,
seems
supposedly doesn't count at all. So
it
Brian,
seems
so
silly
if you
to
were
have
hit that 20 or whatever it is.
Well, the
so so just the, remember when you hit it, it's not like you're automatically slowed for the remainder of your cycle. If you're in a very congested area, you may be slowed every once in a while, but it's not the way it used to be. You exceed your data cap, now you're on 3G speeds for the rest
right.
of your thing. It's not like that. So
you're not stuck for the next 25 days yeah. at 120K.
Yeah, it's not like it's the big deal that it used to be. Used to be that was the case, but. Now, I mean, who cares? I mean, I'm not trying to poo-poo on it. I'm just saying it's not as enticing. Like, if that were the deciding factor as to whether or not I would switch to AT&T, that wouldn't be it.
I do. Well, I think the main thing I like about DirecTV is, or DirecTV Now, is that I can use the TV anywhere, you know, so I can use the AMC app on the Apple TV or any of the other myriad of apps without having to subscribe to a secondary service or whatever to be able to have that internet access.
They've gotten a lot better about it. They used to not. They only used to support like ESPN and a couple others, and now they've opened it up quite a bit. I'm a DirecTV Now subscriber, and I'm a Vue subscriber too, but only because Vue doesn't have any of the Viacom channels, so you can't get like Comedy Central or MTV or any of that stuff through Vue, which is annoying.
I'm a DirecTV Now person as well, so I did that when they first started, so I've got a really good grandfathered in rate. And the one channel that I was bugged about was ABC, because for whatever reason, my home HD home run, my antenna will not pick up ABC well enough since I've moved. But what I did discover this weekend is the basketball games that are on ABC, I can actually watch on the Apple TV ESPN app. So that was the big thing that I wanted to be able to watch, was the basketball that they've been showing on ABC. And they do broadcast those on the ESPN app. So I'm happy there. So now all I'm missing is Roseanne.
Since ABC restarted American Idol, that's the only reason I even downloaded the ABC app in the past couple of weeks, so my wife and daughter could watch American Idol.
So aren't you going to do that Hulu Spotify deal that was announced this week, Jim? So then you could get Roseanne.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. I did do that, and I haven't even reinstalled Hulu on my Apple TV yet. I just did it this week.
What
and
are
I,
you waiting
know, I
for?
I you know, it's $3. It's like I didn't even, you know, $3. So yeah, I need to put Hulu back on there, and now I can catch up with the new Trump and Roseanne show.
I too subscribed to that deal. I tried to go straight to the Hulu and Spotify link and logged in, and it said, you know, hey, this is only good for Spotify premium customers. You know, sorry, you can't sign up right now. So I just went right back to Spotify, signed up for premium, and then 30 seconds later went right back to the link that I originally tried, and it let me add Hulu because I was now a Spotify premium customer.
Now, would that count since I have a Spotify family deal? Would I be able to subscribe to that?
I don't know. I know that one of the stipulations, so I think yes, because what I think they're doing is they're giving you the first month for free of Hulu, and then it's like 99 cents for the next 2 months, and then after that it's a $2.99 add-on. The main stipulation that I didn't like, but I can live with because I'm only, you know, it's costing me $3 for 3 months and then $3 a month after that. There's no way to upgrade your Hulu subscription to pay more for the commercial-free content.
I ran into a real pain in the butt this week with the whole subscription mess. So I was trying to subscribe to Tinder, which I have subscribed to in the past, and I turned it off and I was turning it back on. When I first got on Tinder a couple of years back, it was only available through Facebook login. So I don't usually use Facebook login for anything, but since that's the only way you could get on it back then, that's what I did. Because when it first started, that's kind of how they proved that people who were they say they were and their pictures were valid. Because even the pictures, when it first started, had to come from Facebook. Well, last month, when all the Facebook stuff happened, I reconfigured a lot of Facebook settings. I completely turned off the apps and games platform on Facebook, logged out everything. And when I went back to do Tinder, I had to basically create a new account, just with log in with my email and create a new account, which was fine. Well, this week when I went to subscribe on the phone via iTunes, because I subscribe via iTunes because I get those 15% off coupons. And so every subscription basically I have is percentage off now, going that route. Life hack there if you get
discount dates, huh?
Yeah, discount dates, hookups. When I did that, it says your account is already tied to a different Tinder account. You know, you have to delete the other one. So apparently I never actually deleted the other account. I just deleted the Facebook connection, so it still existed. So I had to log into Facebook, turn apps and games back on, log out of Tinder on my phone, log in with Facebook, hit delete on that account, then go back to Facebook, turn off apps and games again, remove Tinder. And then when I went back to the phone and I hit, you know, log back in instead of restore purchases, then the subscription worked. I mean, that just tells you how deep Facebook is into all
this
stuff.
For a date. That's a lot of hoops, man.
Yeah. Y'all lucky you're not single. It's a pain in the butt these days. So anyway, it's a little bit different, you know.
I just tried to add Hulu to my Spotify account just now, and it says, sorry, family plan members aren't eligible. It would have to be the individual premium. Oh, well.
So let's talk about the flip phone is the new protest statement. I know that we'll have some things to say about this. There was an article that came out this week. I think I found it in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. And it was talking about, you know, in light of the whole #delete Facebook, that some folks are ditching smartphones altogether. And Jim, I think you had some specific thoughts.
Oh, man, we talked about this a little bit on Thursday, and so the person that they quoted in, like, the lead paragraph of the story, it said he was a Parisian painter.
In where, now, Jim? Where was he at?
I don't actually remember that. Was it New York?
Brooklyn,
yeah, in Brooklyn. So, I don't know about you.
The kingdom of hipsters.
You know, I'm a database architect. I'm responsible for databases, and Brian is a solutions architect. He's responsible for solutions, and I think both Brad and
Jason,
sorry, I just
had Fat boy.
Yeah, fat boy. I'm looking right at you.
It was a stroke he just had. Hang on. Are you smelling bread burning?
Yeah. So they both do networking, and, you know, you're responsible for basically things being up, right? Parisian painters, I don't really know if they need emails after hours. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. But it just seems like if they're going to do a story about people switching to flip phones, they might actually find somebody to quote that actually needed a flip phone in, you know, to reply to emails in a timely fashion. I don't know. That's just me. You know, I have no problem with people wanting to disconnect and, you know, go ahead, get your flip phone, and that's fine with me. But the story itself was just like, come on, you know, at least make a convincing argument.
Well, for those apps that would constantly ding your phone, say Facebook or a Twitter app or something, when it asks for permission to do notifications, just tell it no. You know, if you're not a tech person and you're not constantly connected and you're like one of these people who need to focus on painting or whatever it is that you do that is non-technical, just turn the phone off or set it down in the other room. You don't have to have it by your side all the time. That doesn't mean you have to go so extreme as to get a flip phone.
It is a bit of a throwing the baby out with the bathwater type of situation, because that's what I've done for the longest time as well, is, you know, I never turned on notifications with Twitter. When I had Facebook on my phone, I never had notifications turned on with it. Same with, I would come to turn off Messenger in time so that, you know, even when I would get things through Messenger, I wanted to check it on my schedule, not the phone's schedule. Every time someone sends me something, it's not worthy of being seen immediately. But even so, you know, just to play devil's advocate for a minute, you know, I find myself, and I try to stop this, I've tried to curb this behavior quite a bit, of wanting to reach for my phone if, let's say, you know, I'm at dinner or, you know, I'm standing in the post office or grocery store or something where it's so easy to just sort of disconnect yourself from your environment completely. And I still have problems with this to some extent, not with notifications, but I'll pop in the AirPods and just do my own thing and completely ignore the world around me. And there's something to be said for trying to be a little more present and observant, and not saying in the moment sounds cliched, but I don't know, just cognizant of the world around you. I don't know.
Yeah, but there are situations here. I mean, like, if you're standing in line at the grocery store, I mean, I'm a social person. I would actually talk to somebody in line in the grocery store, but I know there are people that I've talked to that are like,
what a psychopath.
This jackhole talking to me in the line at the grocery store. So if I have my AirPods in and I walk around the grocery store and, you know, I'm by myself, you know, I think that's perfectly fine. You know, if I'm standing in line somewhere looking at the news or looking at Twitter or whatever, you know, if I'm sitting at the bar drinking, I don't have my AirPods in. I'm talking to the people, the bartenders, the people around me, listening to the music, everything. There are places for everything. And, you know, I think you just have to, you know, choose that, you know, when you're going to check in and check out. Now, some people may push that a little bit further, you know, and check out more often. But I think those people are also more likely just to stay their butts at home and not be in the public in general. So, you know, I'm not looking at anybody here, but, you know, that just, you know what I mean.
Introverts unite.
But remotely, please.
Yeah, all of us ENTPs out there, let's go out and party.
I have no problem going out and talking to people in public. Part of my job entails talking to the public on a daily basis and being just as outgoing and as personable as I can be. However, given my druthers, as they say, I could live in a sequel to I Am Legend. I think I said that the other day, where it's like, hey, it's my ideal world. It's just me in it. Yay! So
it's the introverted extrovert.
I really am an introverted extrovert. It's like a suit you put on. It's like a switch that I can flip and be outgoing, and you would never know it. But it is not my natural state, I don't think. But, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't want to go back to having a flip phone. I like having a camera too much to be able to go back to some stupid flip phone. A nice camera.
But what if there was like if Sony came out with a really nice 24 megapixel flip phone camera that was just awesome?
The size of a razor.
Yeah.
Might be something to be said for that. There are times that I don't want any disturbance at all. There are times that, you know, if I'm in the middle of running or doing something where I'm singularly focused on my task at hand, I almost want to just turn my phone completely off because I don't want to see anything at that point. It's too easy for me to go and go down the rat hole of an email or a text message or a FaceTime call or something stupid that gets me off of my intended mission. So I think we all need to be a little, we need that. I need that, you know how you're in iOS 11, you can make it so that it says, I can't talk to you right now, I'm driving, and you never see the notification. We need that for other events in life. I don't like you, and I'll get back to you if I feel like it.
We just need a flip phone mode for our iPhones.
That's what it is. There we go. All right, Brad. Yeah, flip phone mode. That sounds like a show title.
Someone needs to come up with a keyboard, one of those optional third-party keyboards that are like doing text messages on a flip phone, where if you want to do like an S, you have to press the 7 key 45 times to get it, and then if you miss it, you got to keep going till you get it again. Wouldn't that be great? That would discourage people from texting.
T9 keyboard, baby.
That would, I bet you could, I somehow that just seems like something that would people would buy just for nostalgia and use it three times and be like, okay.
So they could play Snake on their iPhone.
Great 99-cent app.
If anyone's out there listening, please make that app. I would buy it just for the fun. I'd never use it, but it would be the fun to have it. So there was an article that came out this week that we're going to link to in the show notes that talks about how smartphone AI is still useless and how it can improve. And the main point of the article is that predictive AI should have context. Remind me about my groceries when you detect I'm in the grocery store. I'm kind of surprised that this doesn't happen already. Like when I get in the car and I plug into to CarPlay, I always get directions to where the phone thinks I'm going next. If it thinks I'm going to the work or thinks I'm going to the gym, it just tells me, you know, what the times are for those. I'm sure that happens to you guys too. But I am kind of surprised that if I'm in the grocery store and I tell it, you know, remind me whatever. Now you can say, remind me when I'm in a certain place to do something and it'll do it.
Right. Location-based reminders have been around a while.
They have, but it should be, if you have an assistant and it's like, you know, remind me to buy this, maybe when it knows I'm in a place that might carry that, to pop the reminder up might be, or at least have the option to do it. I mean, that seems kind of like a thing that should be there automatically.
So if you need bars of soap, it would remind you, say, if you were at Walgreens or Kroger or Walmart, not just one a specific place. If you say, remind me when I'm at Kroger, it would remind you at multiple stores.
Yeah, that's a good point. Context in this case is not necessarily one place, but one type of place, not necessarily a specific lat long.
Right. Like I've got the Kroger app and CVS app and whatnot. And so if I'm driving and I'm close to a Kroger, right, a little Kroger, you know, logo pops up on the face of my iPhone, letting me know that there's a Kroger nearby. So if there was an app that kind of had an API that tied into Kroger and CVS, like you mentioned, then as I'm going by, it could say, pick up Benadryl from Kroger or CVS or whatever as I'm going by there.
God, that would drive me nuts. I'd turn all that stuff off. Starbucks likes doing that, you know, where it's like, you're right near Starbucks, or even the Apple Store. Like when you walk in the Apple Store, that thing pops up. He's like, you're in the Apple Store. Would you like to self-checkout? What do you want to buy today? What do you want to buy? What do you want to buy? Buy a watch band. Why buy a watch band?
It's like a car salesman.
Well, it's sort of like in Minority Report. You remember that when he puts in the guy's eyes that he bought on the black market or whatever, or the corneas or whatever it was, I forget. And it starts popping up, hello, Mr. Yamamoto. And, it, you know, would you like these jeans from the Gap?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the world, that's what Minority Report was way ahead of its time. But that whole concept of all that specific advertising and everything, I mean, that's what we're getting these days with what Facebook is trying to do and what Google's trying to do. I mean, that's exactly what all that stuff is. I mean, it's scary, but it's true.
Well, quick segue, since you mentioned watch bands, I got to tell you, you guys are terrible, terrible at the peer pressure stuff. Brian sends this email earlier or message on Telegram earlier in the week, and he's like, you know, hey, man, got the new awesome platinum pure black Nike
Sport Loop.
And I was like, wow, you know, that looks good. And then, you know, next day, Brad, he pipes up and he's like, oh, well, I got the anthracite Nike sport band and it looks real good.
Which is then, Nike's AKA for charcoal.
Charcoal. It does look good.
I own that
good.
One already as well. It's great. I love it.
And then the very next day, Brad or Jim, he pops up and he's like, oh, I got this one. I was like, crap. So I was waiting on my wife in the grocery store, and we were like two exits away from the Apple Store. And so I pulled up the Apple Store app on my phone after going back and looking through Telegram messages. I picked out the crimson and black Nike Sport Loop. And when I got to the Apple Store to pick it up, it is pink and black. It is certainly not crimson. That one got Insta returned. But at that point, I now had my wife with me because it was taking longer and I had to return it. So she's like, well, if I'm going in, you're getting me a band too. So she ends up getting the Nike Sport Band Anthracite like Brad got. And then I ended up getting the black and neon green Nike Sport Band as well.
And that's the same one Jim has had forever, I think, right?
Yeah, so that's the one I've had forever. I like that band, but I really love these Sport Loops. So I bought the knockoff Sport Loop off Amazon about a month or two ago for like $8 or $9. And I really liked it. It's great for when I'm working on the laptop. I don't have to worry about scratching anything. It's really comfy. It fits good. So I've just been using this one, and I didn't even want to know if the Apple ones were better because I only paid $9 for this one. And so Friday night, I went out to dinner, and I was two stores down from the Apple Store. And so I'm like, I'll walk in. And so I had told y'all on Thursday that I kind of had a reveal that I was going to tell y'all about.
Well, I'm here anyway. I might as well go in.
And so my reveal was, until Friday night, I had not laid eyes on or heard a HomePod until Friday night. I don't own one. I've kind of just hadn't been in Apple stores, and I've sort of kind of been avoiding it because I was just afraid, you know, basically as soon as I heard one, I'd be like, okay, I'm going to buy this now. So I walked into the store Friday night, and I did not buy the HomePod. It did look really cool, and it sounded great. But what I did buy was the watch band. So I bought the something fog Nike Sport Loop. It's a cool looking blue. It goes really good with my stainless watch. So
Midnight Fog?
Yeah, the Midnight Fog, I think it is. It's a really cool color. You know, it's a bluish purple green, you know, in green on there. It is wider than the cheaper one that I got on Amazon. I mean, they were both the 42 millimeter, but just the band itself is a little bit wider. And it might be a little bit softer. I don't know. I mean, it's definitely not worth $9 to $50, but it looks nice, and I bought it, and I like it.
I'm sure it certainly has less asbestos than the one you got.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, the Velcro on it might be like, you know, an A+ Velcro versus a B Velcro, you know. You know, it just, I was going to Thursday night, I was, when we were going to record Thursday, I was going to be like, you know, hey, I still haven't heard a HomePod. So that was going to be my reveal. Well, turns out Friday night I went out to dinner and I was two doors down from the Apple store. So I finally went in and listened, and they did sound really good. But just the fact that I've got my nice Mackie monitors plugged into my Dot, you know, I'm going to live with that for now. So
I was half expecting to hear you say you bought a HomePod.
I should have, but I spent way too much money this week.
Brian's face said, "Oh, really?"
I bought that router, and I bought a new bed frame, and I've been shopping for a new mattress. And
me too.
Then I bought this $50, you know, Velcro watch band, and I bought a new laptop bag that, you know, cost $400. Hey. Which watch band did you buy, Brian?
This HomePod's too expensive. I'm going to go out and buy a $400 bag. I like messing with you. Yeah, I was just about to say, though, when we're talking about people buying watch bands, you know, I like setting things in motion where it's like this one little purchase has a chain reaction. When I bought the Hermes Indigo Rouge Tour Rally watch band, nobody else followed me down that path. I was hoping I would see a spur of I wouldn't be the only one, but so far I'm still the only one. This sucks.
How many bands do you own, Brian?
Oh my God.
You were complaining about me and Jason with our shoes. I mean, I've got a lot of shoes. Jason's got a lot more shoes than me. How many watch bands do you own?
I guarantee you I've still spent less on my watch bands than you guys have spent on shoes. I have two.
I don't know. After that Hermes one, I don't know, but.
So I do own the Steel Link, and that one, and that's the black Steel Link. So that is hella expensive by my standards. And I own the Hermes Tour Rally, and that one's a runner up of most expensive. And I have the what do you call it? The Milanese Loop. Okay, there is a recurring theme here, but I probably I have about a dozen bands easily.
You could start a Netflix of Apple Watch bands and make a decent money.
If you look at my Instagram, I was surprised how many Apple Watch bands have showed up on that thing because I have a lot of them on there. But yeah, the Hermes and the Steel Link are probably my most expensive, followed by the Milanese Sport Loop. But most of them are, I do have a lot of cheap bands. I have a lot cheap by Apple standards. I have a lot of the Nike bands and I think a few of the regular sport bands that they do, like the normal, whatever that material is. I have a red one, a black one, a few of those. But I probably have about a dozen bands. We all have our expensive hobbies. How many expensive pens do you own, Jim?
Not that many expensive ones. A whole hell of a lot of cheap ones that I bought over Jet Pens. I was actually looking at Jet Pens for something the other day, and I happened to click on my account. And I've got orders going back for like 12 years on that site for pens. And I mean, I've got hundreds of gel ink pens and all kind of stuff. Now, I do have a couple of expensive ones, but they're still not expensive by pen standards. But, you know, they're $100, $150. But those were mostly like the really nice machined metal ones from Kickstarter. I don't have any fancy fountain pens or anything like that. I don't get into that. But if somebody takes some copper and makes a cool looking pen with it, then I probably own it.
I was about to say, if we were about to go tit for tat on expensive, pointless hobbies, I know I'm not the worst offender. I'm not even the worst offender on this podcast.
Well, I will say that my insurance policy for my hobby items is above six figures. So.
Yeah, I was going to guess that. And I will say to Jim's earlier
question.
That's
a lot of shoes, Jason.
My watch band did cost more than Jim's bag, so there is that. So I probably shouldn't say much. As he pointed out, there's more leather in his bag than there is my watch band.
Yeah, that was I got crap, and I was like, well, which has got more leather in it?
But one is for fun. The other one is, see, I'm morally opposed for something that I'm going to use for work, paying that much money for it. That's just the thing that just irks me. That's like, I can't do that.
I travel so much, this is definitely going to be worth it. So, and it's a beautiful bag.
But would you really take your laptop that often when you travel personally? Like, really?
Always, yeah.
Why?
I would take this bag everywhere I go, yeah.
Well, a bag, I understand, but laptop, though. That's the thing that surprised me.
I don't know. Maybe not. If it's just a weekend trip, then maybe not the laptop. But, you know, anything longer than that, then yeah.
Work reasons or personal reasons? What I'm trying to say is it work that
if
drives
it's a
that?
Personal weekend, then I may not take the laptop.
What anything about a personal week? A
personal week, then I would take the laptop, yeah.
That's crazy pants. Are you taking your MacBook to Thailand when you go?
Yeah, I'll be gone for 2 weeks, and
Are those working weeks or vacation weeks?
Oh, completely vacation weeks. But then I mean, this is my personal laptop. This is my personal laptop. I mean, I'll end up having to, you know, pay some bills and do some other stuff while I'm over there. So, I mean, I could do that on the iPad, but, you know, I'll be there through the end of the month and the beginning of the month. And I pay all my bills like the first week of the month. So,
first of all, why aren't you on autopay? But second, why do you have an iPad Pro?
Well, I could do probably all of that on my iPad Pro. You're right. You're right. And by it's mostly just the credit cards that I use for all the travel that I do for work. And so I could auto pay those, but I have to go in and tell it, you know, pay this amount or whatever. Every, you know, the car, the power, the rent, all that stuff that can be on auto pay is definitely on auto pay.
Everything can be on auto pay. Everything. Ain't that right, Jason? We have personal knowledge of this.
'Tis true.
And that's all we can say about that. So let's see. Oh, I didn't want the show to end before we talked about Amazon, you know, running laps around everyone else in the world of AI. They're now letting anyone create custom questions and responses for Alexa. I mean, that to me is wow. Have you guys seen this? The Amazon blueprints that were announced this week?
So is this like Quora for Alexa?
Not really. You can do some canned type things that that are useful for you. You can do silly stuff like jokes and other things like that. I mean, it's not like it's deep, but this is the type of thing we were just talking about like a week or two ago, where we were talking about being able to customize, you know, how nice it would be to customize Siri for yourself if there are things that you know that you're going to ask it. You can really fill in some missing aspects of AI that, if there's something that I want to ask that no one else is going to ask, why shouldn't I be able to create custom things and put in there? I mean, that's...
So you could use your Echo to Rickroll people all the time. And
you could absolutely
have it just
do that.
Have it just do it at rando questions. So play the Beatles and it Rickrolls you.
So I play Trivia Crack still, this trivia app on the phone. I have a couple of friends that I still play that with. And I was playing it a whole lot more than I am now, but I still play it. And I mean, that's the kind of thing where that game has thousands and thousands and thousands of questions on there, where if you could feed something like that into an Alexa, how fast it could learn all of that different kind of stuff would just be amazing. You know, stupid questions like, you know, which state is bigger out of these four or whatever, you know, and you pick one. You could feed that kind of information, you know, or I don't even, you know, want to, you know, who was the daughter of Hera, you know, it's stupid, just trivia. You know, it seems to me like with this capability, that's definitely what you could do with Alexa is faster than they could load in that kind of information. If they're crowdsourcing loading that kind of information, you could really get it in there fast.
Like Matrix Kung Fu and whatnot.
Okay, these exactly. are aspects of it I wasn't really considering. I was considering more or less things that would only be pertinent inside of your household.
Things that are useful, Brian.
Yeah, things that you might, you know, practical you might need. Things. Yeah, practical stuff. That's what I
like,
was thinking.
Like, how long should I boil an egg or something?
Well, hopefully that should, you know, it should be able to tell you that sort of thing anyway. But I mean, you know, what year did my, I don't know, I can't think of anything right off the top of my head, but hey, you see the use in this.
When is my mom's birthday?
See, that would be a good one. Of course, conceivably, you would think that with the way that Siri does things, do you guys, this is an odd tangent, but you just reminded me of this. Do you guys go in and put in the relationships into your contacts so that you can use Siri to do things like that? Like, I'll say things like, you know, tell me when my wife leaves work, or tell me, you know, put a FaceTime call to my mother. Things like that.
I mean, I did it one time for, you know, wife, mom, kids, dad, etc. I don't ever do it for, you know, coworkers or whatever. You know, I guess you could put in like Jim's nephew did and be like, you know, effing piece of garbage, you know.
That's taking it to a coast trash extreme.
Yeah, I mean,
extreme,
I've got my dad and my mom in there. I think that's it. I mean, my brother and sister are still just John and Tammy, you know, but, you know, I definitely say call mom or call dad or, you know, FaceTime mom or dad, you know, that's definitely, you know, because I call my brother John, I call my mom, I don't call her Cynthia. So that makes perfect sense to, you know, add that relationship in to say call mom, not call Cynthia.
If you ever look at your own contact inside of your contacts, you'll see all of those relationships like father, this name, brother, this name, so on and so forth. It's kind of cool, but You reminded me of that with, you know, when's my mom's birthday. It has access to all this information, but I've seen things before where you'll tell it, call like a company. And if you've ever created an address book entry and marked it as a business, like I would expect when I say call a business, it looks in my contacts first to see if there's a corresponding business. Instead, it'll go out to the internet, find five different matches, and it'll go, which one do you want me to call? Like that type of thing, not mining your own data that you've voluntarily given it, is the dumbest thing in the world.
So this sort of reminds me and ties into an episode of Black Mirror where the copy of you is trained in the little egg thing to know everything you like and know all the things you need to do and can basically do all these tasks for you throughout the day that you don't have to do anymore, like fixing your coffee in the morning or doing your toast or setting alarms or, you know, remembering, you know, reminding you that you need to buy your mom a birthday present or that you need to do this, you know, that sort of thing. That's the exact kind of context, you know, back to the AI context and then what Amazon is doing with, you know, Alexa. Both of those are true context AI. And that episode of Black Mirror is the exact type of solution that you want. The solution, I mean, the way they do it is obviously Black Mirror-ish, where they basically torture a copy of yourself until you agree to, you know, of your fake self until you agree to serve the person.
Spoilers!
You know, really, really great episode. But yeah, I mean, that is the exact kind of context of basically having a copy of you in the phone to do the things, you know, that you wouldn't think to do or know the things that it needs to do, you know, so you don't have to do them. To me, that's the true definition of context from earlier in the podcast.
I like the one where the lady was focused on getting all the likes. That was a good episode.
Yeah, that's going to come true too. Yeah.
I think it already is.
That was a really good episode. She's awesome.
So let's close things out with Apple's machine learning. So it looks like this week that Apple's machine learning blog, which I remember was a thing, but I don't think I was subscribed to it. They don't put posts out all this often, but there's a great blog post that they produced on how they personalize Hey Siri. It is a very lengthy read. It's one that you should take a look at. It's very Apple-y in seeing how they go about doing that. So when you invoke it, what happens, how it can tell you from someone else. You should take a look at it. It's really good.
I read that and I thought it was really neat. I guess I hadn't thought about that. That is the one thing that Apple tries to do with Siri that Amazon doesn't do with their lady. And you can't even say theirs because it's just one name. Whereas at least with Siri, you can say Siri all you want. But, you know, your Echo Dot will respond to anybody in the household, no matter who's talking to it. Whereas Siri at least tries to respond only to your voice. Like there is no training for Amazon. You don't train it to your voice.
So doesn't Amazon's assistant, it does have the concept of multiple people with multiple calendars and those types of things though, right? I say that because nobody except me in my house uses it. But isn't that a true statement? I mean, isn't that what you do in your house, Brad?
No, we don't do that.
Did I dream this?
Yeah, I don't know if it does that or not.
No, I want to say that it's supposed to have that capability, but we don't use it for that. I have, like I've talked about before, I have two Spotify profiles set up, one for my phone and one for the Echo, and it's just so that they don't get crossover whenever I'm driving and using Spotify, for example, but I don't have it tied in to do any sort of multi-user services like that.
Like if your wife said, what's on my calendar today, and you said, what's on my calendar today, there wouldn't be a different answer or something. I think that's kind of what we're talking about.
I disagree. So,
no, I mean, I'm asking, is that the case or not? I don't know. I'm not saying one or the other.
As of last fall, Amazon's Alexa can recognize the voices of multiple users. You'll get personalized messages, flash briefings, and Amazon Music suggestions. So they do, apparently Google Home does this as well, but now you can set up different voice profiles on the Echo Dot. We're sort of outliers here because I know, Jim, you're a single person using yours. I'm the only person in my household that uses mine. Brad doesn't use it in that context. I guess, Jason, I'm assuming you guys don't use it in that context either.
Nope.
Well, there you go. So you have to go through the Amazon app and you go into the settings and there's a thing for your voice and you tap on it and then you
can. Okay, so there is a trainer. Okay.
But Apple was definitely the one that did it first, and Apple's, I would say, is more intuitive. When you set up an iPhone, it's worthwhile to go through that process just so that, you know, if I'm sitting in the room with my wife's phone and I invoke my assistant, it's not going to accidentally invoke hers. I make it five.
Sitting in the doctor's office waiting room and you say, hey, Siri, and it just triggers 60 phones at one time.
Right.
I mean, with mine, one of the things, in addition to the not triggering other devices, if you have two devices, even if I say it and my iPad and my phone are sitting right there, generally it's smart enough to know that it answers on the phone if it's right there. If my phone's not around me and my iPad is there, my iPad will answer. But if they're both there, it will generally answer on my phone. Like when I go to bed every night and I say, set my alarm, they're usually both sitting there because my phone is sitting on the charger, on the touch charger there on my nightstand. And I've probably been sitting in my bed reading or playing on the iPad, which I'm known to do. So the iPad will be sitting there as well. And I'd say 90, 95% of the time, I can say, hey, lady, set my alarm for 7 a.m. and it knows to do it on my phone, which, you know, it's just good. I think supposedly there's some sort of proximity algorithm there, but, it gives preference to the phone.
I probably do need to set up some, at least my wife's voice, because it seems like it has more trouble recognizing that she's even speaking to it versus when I speak to it or when my daughter speaks to it, you know, and generally, she'll just say, hey, lady, add this item to the shopping list. And it seems like I never have any issue getting it to respond correctly to what I say to it, where she may say something three times before it finally recognizes that she has said something at all.
Yeah, you definitely need to do the voice profile stuff. That seems like it might be useful.
And I bet if you asked her, she would say if she asked you something or either one of the kids, she probably has to repeat it three times for them too. So it's probably not unique to just
Alexa. Maybe so.
So in addition to that blog, we talked about how Apple has been beefing up their hires for Siri. Apparently they're building their team in Seattle. And I think some of the news reports that have come out said the HomePod sales have been lagging, and part of the differentiator is the AI capability in that. So I will say I was driving a couple of weeks ago, and I decided to see what Siri was capable of in a couple of different places. So when I was in the car and I had CarPlay going, I would ask for sports scores, it could give it to me. I asked it math questions and it would give it to me. But if I asked anything about a celebrity, like how old is this celebrity, it's like, I'm sorry, I can't do that right here, right now, or something like that. Or maybe not when you're driving, something to that effect, that it was doing that. But that's one of the things that I don't think about. I think if you're driving, the two things you're going to need are going to be dictating text and reading text, which it does. I use that all the time too, so I don't have to touch my phone. Getting directions and maybe sports scores. The simple math thing kind of surprised me, that you could ask it stuff like that and it would respond. That was weird to me.
I tried to do that the other night, and I had like a series of five numbers that I wanted to add together. And I was getting frustrated because I would get like through two or three of them, and then it would give me the solution before I got to the end, because I'm like saying, add, you know, 55 to 89 to 654. And before I could get the next number out, it'd be like 730. I'm like, no, I'm not done yet.
Were you speaking slowly? Were you pausing too long in between numbers?
Yeah, I guess so. I just, you know, I was trying to add a series of numbers together that I was actually trying to use Siri, which I was like, Brian would be so proud of me.
I would be. Bonus points if you did it on your watch.
No, I was on my phone. I've almost bought one of those little Echo with the little bitty screen on it, like the little Echo alarm clock.
Echo
thing.
Spot.
The show.
The Spot.
Show or Spot. Or
no, whatever. The Spot. Yeah, the Spot is the little bitty one. I've almost thrown one of those in my cart several times. I still haven't done it.
Why?
Because I thought it would be a good alarm clock for here at the house.
And they look neat. Know.
They look neat. What I did buy, I ordered it, and it was on sale for one day, and it's back ordered now, so it's not going to ship for a couple weeks. It's a real nice Ultimate Ears Bluetooth speaker. So they used to have the UE Boom, like the really nice UE Boom speaker. They've got a new version of it called the UE Blast that's pretty much the same thing, but it has Alexa built in. So when they released that here about a week ago or so, they had a one-day gold box special of them for $100 for this Boom speaker. And I ordered one because now that'll allow me to throw that in my suitcase and have that when I'm on the road.
We got to back up and talk about this alarm clock thing. My head's about to explode. So wait a minute. What?
It's just a cute little Echo alarm clock, but it's got a screen on it, so you can have, you know, weather on it, you can have the time on it, you can talk to. I just thought it would, you know, it would look neat on the nightstand. And, you know, I mean, that's pretty much it, you know. And it's cheap. It's like, what, like $100, Brad? $80? I don't know, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
it's basically
it's not
a dot with a little screen on it. it looks kind of cool. And it kind of caught me off guard because I didn't actually remember them announcing that one. I remember the show, but I didn't remember this one being announced. And so I was looking at the, you know, how they always have that stuff on sale on Amazon. So I clicked to see what's on sale and I saw it. And I need to go by Best Buy because I bet they have them in stock. And I just want to see how big it is, how big that screen actually is. It's hard to get an idea of how big that little, you know, thing is to decide if I want to buy one. But, you know, I don't really need it because I've got two Echoes now and I've got two rooms in my, you know, loft apartment. I've got a bedroom and another room. I don't need another one.
And you travel every 2 weeks, Jim.
You know, so I can talk to, you know, one or the other depending on what end of the loft I'm in. So I don't need another one. But the boom speaker, I that was just an impulse buy. You know, I was like, all right, I've taken a Bluetooth speaker with me on the road before, you know, just throw it in my suitcase to have in the room. And so this is, you know, just basically the next logical progression of that. I guess I'll have to pair it with my iPad or my phone so it can actually answer questions.
We gave away a spot at a trade show this week that I was at. Out of the several booths that were grouped around our booth, nobody was giving away anything. So, of course, we had the little fishbowl out to where you can go drop your business card or fill out a little slip of paper. And we got so much foot traffic because everybody's like, oh, I've seen those. I want one so bad. And they're pretty neat little things. What's cool about it, too, is the drop-in feature. So, like, you could drop in on somebody, and then the screen will sort of, well, just stay with me. The screen will sort of fade in. It won't just immediately let you see who's on the other side. So, if you're, like, you know, somewhat indecent or whatever, you could have time to, like, slip out of the room and, you know, put on a robe or something, you know. They're kind of neat. I mean, it's not anything I would just immediately need, you know, but they're neat.
I can at least understand the Bluetooth speaker wanting to do that, but the Amazon one, the two things that I wonder about every time I go to a hotel is why they still have them in the room, is why do they still have an alarm clock, and why do they still have a phone taking up valuable real estate on the nightstand? I put both of them on the floor behind the nightstand as soon as I go into a hotel.
I always unplug the phone and put it in the drawer with the Gideon Bible.
Exactly. So,
yeah, I do the same thing with the phones are always like right there on the desk where I need to put my laptop if I want to work from the hotel. And it takes up like, you know, it's these big, huge, old phones. Yeah, I basically just unplug the thing and move it.
I literally haven't used an alarm clock since, I don't know, 2005, 2006. That's why when you said this would make a great alarm clock, I'm like, what is he talking about?
Well, you know, they still put the little iPod docks on the alarm clocks too, and they'll be like the 30-pin dock connector, you know, so that's way out of date, and it took forever for the alarm clocks to ever get that feature by the time it was out of date.
You still use an alarm clock, Jim?
I only on Monday mornings. I mean, I set my phone, but I have like a $10 big screen
as a backup
battery powered alarm clock, because when I have a 6 o'clock flight and I have to get up at 4 a.m., you know, it just, I can sleep through an alarm like with the best of them. So I have this backup that goes off just on, you know, Monday mornings is the only time I use it when I have a flight. You know, I'll set it for like 4:05. That way, you know, if I hit snooze on the iPhone one, the alarm clock is far enough away to where I actually have to get out of the bed to touch it. And that's the purpose of it, is so I have to get up and go turn this thing off. So
interesting. I learned something new about you.
Jim doesn't like to get out of bed on Monday.
I can't use
Welcome to humanhood.
Yeah, why can't you just use your dot for that?
Because the alarm on the Echo Dot is like do 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 do. It's like all like new age music sounding. That thing, I sleep right through it. I've woke up with it going off before, and it just, I don't know, maybe I could tell it to change the sound. Maybe I can go into the app and tell it to change the sound, but the default alarm clock sound on the dot.
It's like he starts lucid dreaming, and it blends in, and he like all of a sudden has a dream where he's in a club or something.
Yeah, I mean, I sleep right through it, and I've done it.
I'm pretty sure you can set it to wake you up to whatever artist you like as well. So you can set it to wake you up to Limp Bizkit or something.
Yeah, I can tell it like, give me some Metallica at 4 a.m. or something.
I was going to say, if you can't change it on that verbally, do you think you'd be able to change it on the one that had the display? It's the same thing.
No, I'm sure with the display I'd be able to. Anyway, that was a rabbit hole, but there you go. So we've talked about alarm clocks and Echo spots. There we go.
Well, I think that should probably do it for about this week, I suppose. Anything you guys want to hit before we go?
Season premiere of Westworld tonight.
Oh, yeah. It's tonight, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Good deal. And look, I've been watching a lot of NBA playoffs, And man, they've been really good. I wouldn't consider myself a huge NBA fan, but the playoffs in the NBA now are so good. Every game has been really good. A lot of young teams that aren't like the same teams that you're used to seeing play all the time, like the Warriors and the Lakers and the Celtics and the, you know, LeBron, whichever team he happens to be playing for this year. I've really been enjoying it. The NBA season is 82 games long, and it takes way too long to, you know, to get through, and every game is, it's not big enough. Like NFL, you play 16 games, so every one of them is very important. So when they get to the playoffs, I've really enjoyed watching some basketball over the last week. I've been home, working from home at night, and here this weekend, trying to keep my mind busy.
There is a lot of great talent playing right now, and not just the talent that you're used to hearing about with, you know, Durant and LeBron and whatnot. I mean,
exactly.
Anthony Davis is playing out of his mind. Ben Simmons is just, I mean, he is a superstar. The 76ers are
the
just
Greek freak.
Really good. He's playing good ball. Joel Embiid came back the other night, made a big difference in the 76ers games. The freaking Pelicans swept their series.
It's been great. It's because you can watch every game. I mean, you know, like I was saying today, you know, like Utah and Philadelphia and New Orleans and who was it? Milwaukee. I mean, these teams that I normally maybe wouldn't watch their games, they've got these great young players on them now that are so much fun to watch. And because it's the playoffs, they're actually playing hard the whole game. And, you know, instead of the NBA regular season is just, it's so long. You just don't get a true product of what the game can really be. But when they get in the playoffs, man, it's serious. And I've really enjoyed it.
Well, mark my prediction. If Cleveland loses in the first round, LeBron will not be back in Cleveland next year. That's my on-air prediction.
All right, we'll write it down. I think I agree with you, though.
That seems like it came from a completely different show. Is Bill Simmons here? Are we in the right place?
Hey, he's got a podcast, and I mean, we tied it all back together.
All right, well, that should do it for this week. Until next time, later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter. We're at infinloopback. That's at INFIN loopback. I'm Brian B. That's at BRIANB. Jim is at Big Jim. That's at BIGJIM. Jason is at JSNYNG. That's at JSNYNG. And Brad is at Meester Idle. That's at MEESTERIDLE. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.